Welcome to Holden Village. Today, in the incredible Creekside Room, the speaker is Karen Herseth Lee. She will be speaking about All My Life I Will Know, a writing workshop. So, let's listen in on Karen.
I didn't write myself until I was kind of old. I already had a couple of kids and I was living in suburbia and I was really lonely. And one day I picked up a pencil and talked. And it is a poem that I still like, although my head isn't in that place anymore, but I was very angry about being so lonely. I felt like my father and my family and my college and my country had promised me something different than sitting in suburbia taking children in and out of snowsuits every 25 minutes in 20 below weather while my husband went off to work. But I was a child of the 50s, so we weren't quite as intentional about some things as some of you who are younger have been able to be. I won't say which is better. I don't know. I think both bring problems of a different kind. But anyway, that poem still stands as a sort of landmark. And gratefully, when I showed it to David, who teaches English at St. Olaf College, he thought it was good too and didn't feel defensive or blamed. And you need support if you like to write. If somebody's always trying to undermine what you're doing, like, oh, you've got time for me to ask you to do this because you're just writing, then it doesn't work so well. You know, you want to be able to have someone value the time. So my role here today, I have a couple of people who've been with the writing workshop for the whole 3 days, and I have some new people. So I have to go over a few things that some of you have heard before. I value a lot a writing technique called, well, it comes from writing down the bones. It's a woman named Natalie Goldberg. She's got two books. This one was her first one. And then she has another one called Wild Mind. And in it, you can open it to any page. You don't have to read it beginning to end. On any page, she has suggestions for your writing, and she's really good. I'm going to read a little bit to you from this. One of the things that I do to begin is read to you. I think that it helps to write when you've been listening to language. Language used well is the music of our culture. It's not only communication, it's the wondrous gift that we have to be able to understand each other. And writing it down helps us remember what it is that we understand or what we come to understand. So Natalie Goldberg has several things that she feels very strongly about. When you come to a class like this, when you do what she's teaching us to do, she wants you to sort of start writing. I'll give you ideas and topics, but you start, and you don't take your pen off the pencil. I time you. It's like a 6-minute writing exercise, or a 10-minute one, or a 20-minute one, or for whatever length of time we have. And your job is to come with your first thoughts that are in your mind. Don't edit. Don't punctuate necessarily. Don't slow yourself down. The most happy experience is to have a good pen, a good wild writing pen that goes fast, not one that slows you down. And you just latch on to whatever are your first thoughts. And if you think too much about it, then you think, oh, this isn't good enough, and oh, I can't do that, and you don't end up with much. But if you do this other way, you may end up with a page, with 2 pages, with 3 pages, and maybe only 3 or 4 or 6 lines of the whole thing you really like. But you've got them. You know, you can throw away the other. She calls that composting. That's good for Holden Village too. You know, what you're doing is entering into a kind of discipline. You're doing an exercise. It's like practicing the piano. You don't expect to have something marvelous the first time, and the more you do it, the better you get, and the more fun it is. And so it really is her, you can buy that. I think Writing Down the Bones might be in the bookstore. I don't think Wild Mind is, but are they both?
Yeah, they
are. Okay. Yeah, they'll probably go fast. I know that I talked a lot about them last year. She also has a new book out, and it's not so much a writing exercise book, but it's a wonderful read. It's called Long Quiet Highway, and it's a tribute to her Zen teacher. And she really thinks about writing and other kinds of things as a time apart, a meditative exercise, something that you do every day. It's like sitting in yoga. It's making yourself present to the table, to the paper, to the pencil. And William Stafford was quoted when he did a reading at St. Olaf once as saying the only thing that makes him different from anybody else, the only thing that makes him a writer is that every day he picks up a pen and paper and writes. Otherwise, he's no different from anybody else. He happens to love it, and so he does it a lot. So I'm going to begin by reading to you. The other thing that I like to rely on, and probably some of you have read Pilgrim at Tinker Creek by Annie Dillard. She has a chapter in here on seeing. And that's the other thing Natalie Goldberg talks about, is detail. You give attention to detail. You see things carefully. And then you write those details down. If you're going to start writing about yourself, like I might, living in Minnesota, I don't start by saying, I'm a young woman or middle-aged woman who lives in Minnesota. I start by saying my name is Karen Herseth Wee, and I live on Prairie Avenue in Northfield, Minnesota, in the hemisphere of, and on in this month, this is what happened to me. And then you go and you name it. All those details. And so one of the reasons I'm going to read this to you is to get you to think about seeing. And I've read a couple of sections of this to the other classes, so I'm going to start at a new place where she goes on about being careful about seeing. And of course, if you're in a class and you don't have things to look at, it's careful about thinking about detail, the detail that's in your mind. So she says, a lover can see, and the knowledgeable. I visited an aunt and uncle at a quarter horse ranch in Cody, Wyoming. I couldn't do much of anything useful, but I could, I thought, draw. So as we all sat around the kitchen table after supper, I produced a sheet of paper and I drew a horse. That's one lame horse, my aunt volunteered. The rest of the family joined in. Only place to saddle that one is on his neck. Looks like we better shoot the poor thing on account of those terrible growths. Meekly, I slid the pencil and the paper down the table. Everyone at that family, including my three cousins, could draw a horse beautifully. When the paper came back, it looked as though five shining real quarter horses had been corralled by mistake with a papier-mâché moose. The real horses seemed to gaze at the monster with a puzzled air. I stay away from horses now, but I can do credible goldfish. The point is, I don't know what the horse lover knows. I just can't see the artificial obvious that those in the know can construct. A herpetologist asks the native, are there snakes in that ravine? No, sir. And the herpetologist comes home with, yes, sir, three bags full. Are there butterflies on that mountain? Are the bluets in bloom? Are there arrowheads here or fossil shells in the shale? Peeping through my keyhole, I see within the range of only about 30% of the light that comes from the sun. The rest is infrared, some ultraviolet, perfectly apparent to many animals, but invisible to me. A nightmare network of ganglia charged and firing without my knowledge cuts and splices what I do and edits it for my brain. Donald E. Carr points out that the sense impressions of one-celled animals are not edited for the brain. This is philosophically interesting in a rather mournful way, since it means that the only simplest animals perceive the universe as it really is. A fog that won't burn away drifts and flows across my field of vision. When you see fog move against a backdrop of deep pines, you don't see the fog itself, but streaks of clearness floating across the air in dark shreds. So I see only tatters of clearness through the pervading obscurity. I can't distinguish the fog from the overcast sky. I can't be sure if the light is direct or reflected. Everywhere is darkness, and the presence of the unseen appalls. We estimate now that only one atom dances alone in every cubic meter of intergalactic space. I blink, I squint. What planet or power yanks Halley's Comet out of orbit? We haven't seen that force yet. It's a question of distance, density, the pallor of reflected light. We rock, cradled in the swaddling band of darkness. Even the simple darkness of night whispers suggestions to the mind. Last summer, in August, I stayed at the creek too late. This is a woman who likes to live outside and likes to write about that. And I can recommend Annie Dillard to you, almost anything that she writes. Okay, the next thing I'm going to do is read you a couple of things that you can pick these books up, and anything is good. See if I can find what I'd really like to have. What great writers actually pass on is not so much their words, but they hand on their breath at the moment of inspiration. If you read a great poem aloud, for example, to a skylark by Shelley, and read it the way he set it up and he punctuated it, what you are doing is breathing his inspired breath at the moment that he wrote the poem. That breath was so powerful, it still can be awakened to us 150 years later. Taking it on is very exhilarating. This is why it is good to remember. If you want to get high, don't drink whiskey. Read Shakespeare, Tennyson, Neruda. Read them out loud and let your body sing. I love that idea of an author's breath because it reminds me of the spirit. You know, you're passing on the spirit of a person. And if you think about it that way, then it really becomes that. Okay. This one ought to be good for Holden. Writing is a communal act. A student said, I'm reading so much Hemingway, I'm afraid I'm beginning to sound like him. I'm copying him and not having my own voice. Well, that's not so bad. It's a lot better to sound like Hemingway than Aunt Bethune, who thinks Hallmark greeting cards contain the best poetry in America. We always worry we're copying someone else and that we don't have our own style. Don't worry about that. Writing is a communal act. Contrary to popular belief, a writer is not Prometheus alone on a hill full of fire. We are very arrogant to think we alone have totally an original mind. We are carried on the backs of all the writers who came before us. We live in the present with all the history, the ideas, and the soda pop of this time. It all gets mixed up in our writing. Writers are great lovers. They fall in love with other writers. That's how they learn to write. They take on a writer. They read everything by him or her. They read it again until they understand how that writer moves, pauses, sees. That's what being a lover is. Stepping out of yourself, stepping into someone else's skin. Your ability to love another's writing means those capabilities are waking up in you. It will only make you bigger. It won't make you a copycat. The part of another's writing that is natural to you will become you, and you will use some of those moves when you write, but it will not be artificial. Great lovers realize that they are what they are in love with. That is what happened to Allen Ginsberg when he wanted to write so that Jack Kerouac could understand him. Being in love with Jack Kerouac, he discovered he was Jack Kerouac, and that's something love knows. You are Ernest Hemingway on a safari when you read Green Hills of Africa. And then you are Jane Austen looking at Regency women. And then you are Gertrude Stein doing her own cubism in words. And then you are Larry McMurtry in Texas walking to the pool hall in a dusty town. Writing is not just writing. It is having a relationship with other writers. And don't be jealous, especially secretly. That's the worst kind. If anyone writes something great, it's more clarity in the world for all of us. Don't make writers other or different from you. They are good and I am bad. Don't create that dichotomy. It makes it hard to become good if you create that duality. The opposite, of course, is also true. If you say I'm great and they aren't, then you become too proud and unable to grow as a writer or hear the criticism of your work. Just, they are good and I am good. That statement gives a lot of space. Okay. I think the first thing that I'm going to do, I'm trying to figure out how to keep this rhythm of listening and hearing. Oh, I know. One thing I didn't want to forget. Only about three of you now. You should have a piece of paper and make yourself a travel sack. This is supposed to be a knapsack, and I don't know how to draw. So I made a knapsack. And in this knapsack, you put the words you love. And you carry this around and see how many words that you love. If you like to write, you probably do love words. And some words are absolutely beautiful. The one poem that I have that's written just because I like the sound of a word was one called Aubergine. And aubergine in Europe is an eggplant. And it's so much more beautiful sounding word than eggplant. And I ended up writing about it just because I like it. So I have this out on my desk up there, and so every once in a while when I come across a word, I write it down. So we're going to be sort of thinking about words in this session. Strong words, words not so strong, all of that kind of thing. So I think the first thing I'll do is have you turn and look at that board where I wrote some words. And on your piece of paper from each of those 10 categories, pick one that appeals for you for no reason that you can explain. Just pick one and write them down.
One from each category.
I know it's hard to see.
Didn't bring my glasses.
Oh, yeah. So just in that list, and don't even think about it very much, just pick one as you go down the categories. Okay, I'm going to stop you with that. You may not be done, or it may have been frustrating because some of these things work for some people and not for others. And the next thing may work for you and not for someone else, and that's kind of the way it goes. Does anyone have anything that happened with this word exercise? Okay, would you like to read it?
I have here, the window opens longing for the night, my heart closes afraid to mourn, his hair in a basket at my feet, our relationship cast out to the emptiness. Mm. I think it's not my son, I lost my son
about. Oh, yeah. The thing I notice in that, too, is that you've used words that have this long sound to them, the longing and the mourn, and that there is a wistful quality in the writing as well. Yeah, wonderful. Anyone else? Yes. Mm-hmm.
It is the quiet and unsettling hunger after one solid night of something you can't quite understand. After the crunching of gravel on a dark rooftop, when all you can think is, but I didn't give you my heart, I didn't give you my heart. And the moon is fat in the dripping swollen sky, and there's only to choose once, to reach out and touch gently the hand of everything when, against your only self, it is a kind of quick fire, an opening of the pulse to the sharp air and the knowledge that it is still not enough.
It's wonderful. It's just wonderful. Yeah. Yeah. It's like magic. I mean, you can't tell which ones are going to work and which ones won't. It's like magic. Okay. Anyone else?
Well, I have one.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really put in a whole lot of different words there, but to desire ruin, ruin of the wind, infinite in its silence, memory of hungry silence, quiet violation in silence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's almost, I always start calling things poems when what you're not saying is just as important as what you are saying. That's one of my definitions. I mean, there are other more specific ones about poetry, but I think poetry leaves out a lot and implies And what is left out is just as important as what you have on the page. Anyone else? Okay, then I'm going to try another weird thing. I want you to take each of you one of these. I haven't touched them. But you can take one of these things. The writing is also tactile. I'm almost running out here.
I don't know how many people would be here.
No, we're just fine. Yep. Okay, now I want you to, you're going to take a bite and you're going to write down three strong words. And these words do not have to describe that carrot, but take a bite, listen to the sound, what it's like to bite through it, and write down three strong words. Does not have to be logical. Take another bite and see if you get another strong word. Listen to it. Okay, now smell your wrist, or smell your arm. Smell what you smell like. Write down what you think you smell like. It doesn't have to be accurate, just what you think you smell like. If you put carrot, I'll understand. Maybe put a couple things if a couple things come to mind. This is trying to tap into your wild mind, the mind that's not logical. Okay, now I want you to think about these strong words or other strong words and tell them to me. And I'm going to write them down. And you can write down the word if you think it's strong. Not everybody in here is going to think all these words are strong. So on your list, you're going to have only the ones you think from this list. But just throw out a word that you think is strong. Strike.
Snap.
Polarize. Crushing.
When you write down any of them that you think are.
Mutilation.
Grinding.
Birds.
What is it?
Birds.
Anything else?
Cosmetics.
Anything else? Any other strong words coming to mind?
Grump.
What was it?
Grump.
Okay. Any more? Any strong verbs? Action words. We've got one.
Crunch.
Crushing. Grinding.
Yeah.
Mutilation. Pulverizing.
Okay, okay, now. Harder with the nouns. Nouns are really important because as a writer, you're a visual artist.
Vanilla?
Vanilla. Oh, that's a nice one for a Travis guy, too. Vanilla is such a nice word, isn't it?
Toast.
Okay.
Rock.
Good.
Spice.
Okay. How about some adjectives in here?
Pasty.
Tumultuous. Okay. Okay. We're gonna do a similar thing. We're gonna go. You can go back to those 10, but this time choose different words and choose some of the ones you've chosen down there. So you've got 10. Why don't we say 4 more out of 1, 2, 3, 4 the way I've written them. So choose different words. And now keep your mind, don't try to be making up your poem as you're picking your words. Do this, wild mind, pick your word first without thinking about it. Choose a word from each of those lines, put it on your paper, and then throw it into a concept, a paragraph, maybe a poem, whatever form it wants to take. So choose a word from each of those 10 that just comes to you. Don't take any time, just kind of move quickly. And then add those last ones. Okay, and I'd like to ask if anyone has anything that you'd like to read.
I'll read mine just here.
Okay.
In the field, I feel my sack, the wind against my back, with lilacs. Gravel crunching under my heels, my hunger grows. I see the roof of a house where crisp toast is sufficient. I close the door, no regrets.
Now you see, her piece did what you want these exercises to do. They push you to somewhere you wouldn't go without those words. And you know, we all get caught. We get trapped in our own ideas, or we sit down to write and we don't know what to write about, and you find yourself kind of using the same ideas or the same language, but this is very arbitrary. And you can do it for yourself. It's partly the idea of the travel sack. I mean, when you fill up your travel sack, you could cut it into four sections and see what happens by using the words in one section. Just, you know, try to just make yourself present to your table and your pen at a quiet time in the morning when you haven't thought about it too much. And it's when you think about it too much that you just get stuck and you can't go anywhere. But it's very freeing to have, or to get a friend and have them throw out a bunch of words that you wouldn't have thought of and see what happens. And it's one of these things that tries to push you into something else that you wouldn't have done. That's a really good example. Anyone else?
That's what I like.
Okay, great.
Convalescence. Lying against the border of living and dying, looking from inside a ravaged, mutilated body, being able to do nothing but stare at that boat, that chair, that hand that is attached to me, fighting a tumultuous sea that keeps rising up, it only partially works. Dry toast, it is sufficient.
We've got toast cropping up here quite often. Anybody else with toast in what you wrote? I'd love to hear anything else that you've got, because the reading out loud, I don't know if I can find the section right away. She's got a really good section in here on reading out loud, but I probably can't find it when I want it. Here it is. It is important to read out loud what you write. In writing groups, I ask people to write and then immediately after to read it to the larger group or a smaller group or a person sitting next to them. It is part of the writing process, like bending down to touch your toes and standing up again. Write, read, write, read. You become less attached to whether it's good or bad. I wrote this, now I'll read it. No big deal. If you don't read aloud, the writing tends to fester like some wound in your notebook. I can't say why, but the simple act of reading it out loud lets you let go of it. And don't forget this. Believe me, it helps. At first, it's a scary thing to do. Your voice shakes, your heart pounds, your breath gets tight. In one class, we jokingly called it the breathing disease. But no one ever died of it, so don't worry.
So that's one of my encouragements.
Okay, this next one is going to be more free. And I'm going to give you 10 minutes on it, so it's kind of long. And I'm going to give you a first line and hope, and you can use anything from the strong words to what comes to mind to what you know in your own life. So this first line, and this is somebody else's line. Another poet I like is a woman named Linda Gregg. And I've borrowed lines from her all over the place, and then I have to, of course, attribute them to her. So in my own poetry, I have to say line one from Linda Gregg. Let's see how this starts. If it were all right just to love and die, this is your first line. If it were. If it were all right just to love and die, dot, 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 and you keep your hand, remember Natalie Goldberg, she said don't edit, keep your hand flying on your paper, even if you're writing something about this is the stupidest exercise I've ever heard of. Life, write it down that way. Don't worry about your spelling. Don't think too much about it. If it were all right just to love and die. Thank you. think I'll slow you down a little bit. It's a little less than 10 minutes, but I'm hoping you might have something that you'd like to read to the rest of us, and that'll take a little time. So another half a minute. Okay. Well, did that line work for anyone?
Yeah.
Linda Gregg is good, I tell you. If you are in a bookstore where you can find some of her poetry, I really recommend it. Good. Good. Good, good.
If it were all right just to love and die, I would love everything. All the little animals, all the people, all the wild hills, lakes, lovers, lookouts, and valleys. If it were all right just to love and die, I would show my heart to everyone, because waiting around for someone who wants to hear what I have to say takes so long. And what would they think if they really knew me, with all my dragons and wildfire moons locked up behind bright eyes. Surely they wouldn't want to know me, not like you do at least. But if it were all right just to love and die, I'd still love you just the same, whether you liked it or not. I'd love the world too. If it were all right just to love and die, I think I would still have my dragons and wildfire moons haunting me. Because there are some things you just can't share with the world. Like how it feels to be crying, and how you kiss away the tears. Or how you go through your little process every time to try and cheer me up, try and make me laugh. Try and make me laugh now from so far away. Just try. So maybe you're not here now, and that sucks because I've grown so attached. But if it were all right just to love and die, I'd still miss you like crazy.
Wonderful. And one of the really interesting things that you did without even knowing it is the repetition, which builds the energy of where it's going, you know? I mean, she did it just naturally. That's one of the things that, you know, a writing teacher could come and talk to you about, is how to use repetition. It just appeared. It's wonderful, thank you. Is anyone else? Okay, Maria?
I'm a major victim of breathing disease, but I don't want any sores touching my nose. If it were all right just to love and die, well then it wouldn't matter anymore. This illness, this loss of faith, this desperation, this wondering what it will come to. Will I see purple irises in bloom next year? Or would I smell again the comforting closeness of a lover's body? Would I see the heights of peaks and justice come? Would I be able to work for a new world? Would I ever get to make eggplant tamales again with Peter? Or sing a harmony again in the back porch? Gray and splintering from years of use, where we gather and watch the few stars that Washington, D.C.'s skies will allow us. Where the avocado seed they smuggled back from Israel has become a tree, and shades us a little when D.C. summers become too steamy. Where rusted rail ties and sickles hang along the fence, and crystals from a discarded chandelier mingle with the honeysuckle vines and cast rainbows on the kitchen wall around which we can dance and dance and never tire. I wouldn't wonder if I could bathe naked in a waterfall again, or stay up all night, or ride my bike again down the half an hour straight descent at Catoctin Mountain Park, the one you receive as a gift of flying wind through your hair after struggling in every gear of a 45-degree angle for a mile. Wouldn't wonder if Lily and I could roam another swap meet together, or sleep an afternoon away on a cedar porch overlooking the scrub apple orchard dotted in red in September, while the people of New Paris gather to make big vats of apple butter in the town below. I wouldn't need to know if I could walk the mountains of Guatemala, stethoscope in hand, because I have loved.
Wonderful. Wonderful. You can feel the place. You can feel Washington, D.C. with the few trees that give shade on a hot day.
Steamy.
Yeah. Steamy. It's really wonderful. And you moved us around a lot. Thank you. Anyone else?
Don't
just,
like reading out
my stuff. That's fine.
If it were all right to just love and die, perhaps life would become a softer place with hushed footsteps, warm skin brushing warm skin, with no care for the garments that hung upon it. If it were all right to just love and die, the murmur of voices spoken in endearing tones, like bells from the monastery tower at eventide, would mean more than the roar of the freeway. If it were all right to just love and die, there would be no room for anger and resentments. There would be no time for the spaces of alienation. There would be no use for the brutish force of attack. If it were all right to just love and die, we can lie down beside each other in a field of daisy and watch the sky change form like and plan a relationship through the universe adventure. If it were all right to love and die, it would be easy if I were dying first and preparing the homecoming celebration for you.
Wonderful. Another one who got power from the repetition, too. That's interesting that it happened that way. Thank you. I find these really special times.
You know, we're sort of a group of strangers here, but the thing we share is loving writing and words and experience and putting it down. And it's very moving. I think I haven't ever been in a workshop situation where something so moving that it, you know, that it just takes its toll, it comes up. And that's part of what makes it sacred, I think. Well, you have one small assignment, but first, tomorrow, I think it's at 5, I forgot to look at our key, it was 5:30. I think we'll be back in here, but I would like us to do a reading together. I have some things that I'll read. We can think of it as very informal. We don't care if other people come from the village or not. They might not. If we find we're a little too big for this room, maybe we'll go down by the fire ring outside if it's a nice night.
I think they put it right there.
Did they change it?
I think on the kiosk it says fireside room.
Oh.
I think.
That's a nice room to be in, I mean, for a reading. This is a little more academic and doesn't work quite as well.
I think that's what it said.
If we're in there, then we'll just stay in there. But if it turns out that my assignment is to be in here and it doesn't feel quite right, maybe we'll just hike over to the fire ring right over there and just read. And bring anything that you want, short, long. Something that you would like to share. And I know Carolyn, I've known Carolyn Horner quite a while, who has come to the couple of others, and she had promised me she'd show up if few of us did. So, but the one assignment I want to give you, and I think you can write about it, but you might have to write about it back in your room tonight. I want you to go outside sometime between now and oh, it doesn't matter when it is, but sometime this evening, and hug a tree and kiss it. Hug and kiss the tree. And then write a bit about what that was about and what you were thinking about when you did it. And what it means. This is something we might have done when we were three.
Right.
I had one of my friends in the art department tell me that they're